life ending is the price of admission for life. Like this, that's the ticket, you know?
Welcome to the Dear Younger Me podcast. I'm your host, Peter Egwai. If you could give three pieces of advice to your younger self, what would they be? Our guests answer that question and tell their story with as much honesty as they can bear. No names needed, but I try to make sure everything remains raw. So, if you want to get involved or for anything else, drop me a line via hello@dearyounger.me. On this episode, we agree upon the world's greatest invention, remind ourselves about the cyclical nature of finance, and reminisce on being too broke to fill up your car. Okay, Reggie, welcome to the Dear Younger Me podcast. Can you introduce yourself for the listeners?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Peter. My name is Reggie Johnson. I do a show called Reg and ATL and Just a Stats, a sports show. I'm from Atlanta, Georgia. Started that show about 4 years ago and definitely happy to be on.
Superb. So what's the first piece of advice that you'd give your younger self?
Okay. First piece of advice, and I'm going to do this in order, actually, of importance for me. Very simply, don't worry as much. I'm going to expand on each one of these kind of as I give it. I'm going to give it and I'll kind of expand on it a bit. So when I'm saying mean, don't worry as much, I think when I was younger, everything seemed like a problem, whether it's friends. And this, Peter, goes from like middle school, high school, college, all the way up until, you know, I think maybe 10 years ago, I stopped worrying as much. I don't think you ever stop worrying completely because life has so many changes. So I don't think you ever stop completely worrying about things. But I would say just not to worry as much because things sort themselves out better than people tend to know, and definitely better than I knew back then myself, you know?
You said everything seemed like a problem. Did the problems have a common theme, or was it just like a diverse series of problems?
Man, I was an equal opportunity worrier, man. I worried about everything.
Okay. Okay.
I worried across the board, Peter.
Okay, so was it just general anxiety, or was it specific sort of worrying about the consequences of your actions or the consequences of other people's actions, or was it just everything? Like, I just give me a sense of the type of worrier you were.
So it could be finance worry. Finance worry is something that's kind of like underlining of life, especially in any capitalist society. So you have like a worry about finances. Will there ever be enough? Do I have enough? So my financial situation got a little bit better as life went on. So I didn't worry about finances as much as I got older. But I will tell you that you don't ever stop worrying about how you come across to people or how people, you know, things that may happen in social situations. I've never had social anxiety or anything like that. So I can socialize pretty easy, but that doesn't mean you've always said the right thing or you've always done the right thing. And you think about it later, like, oh, maybe I should have went left when I went right, or went right when I went left. You know, things of just rethinking situations and past relationships as well. You know, just kind of learning to let go of past anxiety, you know?
I get the impression that once upon a time you found it hard to let go. Like, I guess the thoughts were intrusive. What was that like?
It can be, man. And I think one of the things I've learned is that you only have the present, Peter. Like, you don't. The past is the past and the future is not guaranteed. So you really only have the present moment. And I think I got better at living in the moment because replaying past relationship issues, replaying past maybe situations with friends that may have went south and stuff like that. Fortunately, I don't have a ton of those, but they're still there. And at times in my life when I was younger, these are things that I would spend a decent amount of time worrying about that as I've gotten older, I just, you know, kind of let it go, move on to the next, you know, the next situation.
And how did that happen? What was it that made you move on from your previous modus operandi?
I think that just getting older, knowing that you don't have forever, you get a better sense of time. And I'm not saying that, you know, not like I'm like, you know, 60, 70, but I'm pretty sure that as the people that are older than me feel the same way, maybe even more, of just like, you don't have a lot of time left and your time on earth is kind of fleeting in comparison to how long the planet's been around. You know, a human lifespan is not very long in the scheme of things. So you just get to the point where you are, you're just going to be able to move on easier just due to the fact that, hey, I don't have all day type situation, you know, to worry about these past problems. And I think that realization just came to a point probably like in my mid 30s going into 40.
Okay.
Well, the thing about not worrying, right? So you've got the present and you're not going to live forever. That can be like a really existentially worrying thought. I was having a conversation with someone the other day, and one of the things about not living forever, it's not actually death or pain. And they said they worry about the people that they leave behind. That wasn't even the thing that made me worry. The thing about death that makes me worry is I'm not going to get to see what becomes of mankind, like of the human species. Like, I'm never going to see if we ever do the Star Trek stuff. Like, if we ever, can you imagine if the day after I die, they invent teleportation or something? I'll be furious.
Right.
I'll be furious.
You're like, I missed out on the big reveal of a certain type of technology or where humanity's going. I feel like that's a decent worry.
Basically, I'm a huge techie. I'm a huge techie. And I think that's like one of the things that keeps me going is that I just hope that human beings are going to consistently create more and more interesting technology. So there's that curiosity aspect. But yeah, I wouldn't say it's a worry or an anxiety, but yeah, faced with the fact that your time on Earth is limited, doesn't that make you worry even a little bit?
It doesn't. Maybe when I was younger, it doesn't now, because hopefully you get to live your life. You know, I feel like some people may have more regrets depending on how actively they're living the life they want to live. Because I think that you get to the end if you did not. Let's say that you, a typical American dream, let's say that you are subscribed to that, and then you had the 2.5 kids, the picket fence, the house, and all that stuff. You get all that stuff, and then you realize, hey, this is not for me. I feel like those kind of people are going to worry more about life ending than somebody who just led the kind of life they wanted to. And understanding that life ending is the price of admission for life. Like, that's the ticket, you know? The price of admission is your life is going to end one day, you know? And also, Peter, where we fall on the timeline of life, I'm satisfied with. When you look at the past and the lack of technology back then, I'm glad I wasn't this age in, like, the 60s or the 70s.
Yeah. I think about this every time. So the other day, when Tyson Fury won the, unified the belts. And you just think, you think about a guy like Tyson Fury or even Mike Tyson, and you lived in Mike Tyson's town back in like 2000 BC. Like, what would you do when he comes up to you and he says, like, give me your, I don't know, spade.
You just have to give him your spade.
There's no police. And it's not even like you could go to, like, just go on Amazon and get another spade. Like, that spade might have been passed down from your great-great-granddad. And it's like, yeah, we live in a time of, you know, relative freedom compared to the vast majority of human beings that have lived. But isn't it strange that we manage to generate new anxieties and new things to worry about? You know, we say first world problems, but really we've got most of the things we worry about are 21st century problems.
Exactly.
Really,
they kind of just come with the stuff. Like, we were talking about tech stuff at the beginning. Like, if you have tech issues, that means there's tech there for you to have issues with. So, you know, kind of come along with each other.
Yeah. So you mentioned finance worries, and you're not too worried at the moment, but that's something that's
all
in the air, right? The economic outlook for, I'm in the UK, you're in the States, and the economic outlook doesn't look like a whole heap of fun. And
true.
The idea of don't worry as much is, some people might say, well, that's easy to say. If all you've got to concern yourself with is looking after yourself, but how have you found yourself managing that piece of advice, you know, in the present day?
With everything that's happening, like inflation and everything like that?
Yeah, exactly. Inflation and the various different challenges that people have, you know, inflation and joblessness. We've just gone through a pandemic, you know, it's a world in which the TV will tell you for sure that there's lots to worry about.
Yeah, and I think there's a good point to that, because I can only speak from my personal perspective, and I can only speak from my perspective in a sense of like what I've gone through, so I can understand the financial worry. And I get what people, the anxiety that people will face with that, the anxiety where it's at the grocery store, the gas pump, stopping at a red light and hearing your car make a funny sound, and you're like, oh my God, like that's just, there's no good time for that to happen. You know? So I do get all that. I think managing it is just a matter of just looking back in the past of where, and depending on where your age falls. I feel like if you're younger, you worry more about these things than if you're older and you've been through things, how, which is my case in particular, I'm just going on experience. I've gotten out of them. I've had ups and downs. Life has been like a roller coaster. There's been ups and there's been downs. But I know that where my current state is, that the up part is coming back. Now, even if, no matter how down the down part gets, there will be another day if you allow yourself to have one. You know, there's going to be another day coming, and it, every day is not going to be horrible. This inflation is not going to last for an eternity. Some of that's just knowing the history of things, you know? If you don't know the history and you feel like inflation is going to last forever and we're going to be in this economic downturn forever, then you probably just don't know the cyclical nature of finance and how it tends to go in these countries. You know, there's ups and there's downs.
You know, that's probably one of the most insightful things that anyone's ever said to me, what
really?
You just said, which is, you know, there's ups and downs. And oh, you know, years ago, I was in a weird place, you know, like it wasn't worry so much. It was just a lack of satisfaction with my situation and the direction and trajectory and various different things. And one of my friends at the time, and this is the best thing about, you know, the people that pop into your life, was he just looked at me and said, you know, Peter, life has its ups and downs. And it's such a simple piece of advice, but it caught me at exactly the right moment in my life, because it was just, it changed the perspective that it made me realize, yeah, you're on a journey. And as any sports player knows, you can't sit there worrying about the shot that you missed when you've got
exactly
another shot to take. And the ability to keep on moving forward, despite the fact that you aren't omniscient and omnipresent, you're not perfect, you're just a human yeah being. It's an important idea to carry around with you as you move through time, because really the anxiety and the worry come from the fact that we've got a prefrontal cortex and we can imagine
yes
the future and understand the ways in which the future might not manifest in the way that we desire, and the fear that arises when we wonder if the future is going to be unmanageable. But as all of our ancestors have shown, you know, growing up with people who would have made Mike Tyson look like a, you know, a chihuahua, you survive stuff, you know. We're human beings and we're more resilient than we look.
Mm-hmm.
Question for you though, and this is sort of the argument against, in a sense, being worry-free. So thought experiment. If I said to you, you have all of the resources in the world, right? So you've got all the time, all the money, all the skill. What would you build?
Father, all the time, all the money, all the skill. Is that anything? Are we going like websites? Are we going buildings? Or are we looking for something like tangible that you can like walk into?
Yo, you could think as big or as small as you want to think. Like I'm saying, what would you, Reggie Johnson, build if you had all the money, resources, and skill in the world?
I hate to say this, but it's kind of already there. And I do give money to it. And I hope that if I had more money, I would give more money to it. So what I would build is kind of already there. It's Wikipedia. I'm very interested in people being able to obtain knowledge from the same place. I feel like knowledge is real power. And I like the fact that anybody with a phone can go to Wikipedia and get the same answers that somebody, you don't have, it's not behind like some massive paywall. If I had more money, I would probably give more money to Wikipedia and things that are kind of like that. Right now I do Georgia Public Broadcasting, but that's like just public broadcasting PBS, which is in the States. I'm not sure what the equivalent may be for the UK, but PBS in the States, stuff like that. It just helps to give, helps people attain more knowledge about things if they seek it.
Listen, we're kindred spirits. One charity that I give to every month.
Oh, there it is.
And yeah, listen, Wikipedia, I've said to many people, I think is up there with rockets and chemotherapy, like in terms of the level of invention and achievement that human beings have reached. It's when you think if I knew nuclear war was starting tomorrow, I'm going and I'm downloading the entire Wikipedia onto like a USB stick. It would be like the Holy Grail. Like, can you imagine? You have all of human knowledge right there. However, and this is the reason why I asked the question about building things, is that inherent in anything good that you can do, there's always the problems that arise, right? And I didn't know this until recently, that there's like an entire political war that goes on in terms of Wikipedia. It's just, it's absolute mayhem in the background to get, we just see the page and it's a page with all of the information we have. But in the background, there's entire, you know, there's people behaving like emperors and empresses who are running, you know, the Wikipedia page for some, I don't know, some bacteria, and they basically sit down there and nobody is allowed to criticize what they put, and if anyone makes a change they revert it. So it's not perfect, right? Because it's human created, but well, compared to everything that we do, like, Wikipedia is definitely up there.
It is for me, for sure.
Great website. It's a thing though that I actually thought when I first bumped into the internet that the whole of the internet would be kind of like Wikipedia. That people, you know that I it's naive super, but I thought that people would basically just do things that are going to make the world better and everyone would be having like great conversations and there would be like a real increase of knowledge. Yeah, I know. Yeah, trust me, I'm an idealist. But the thing is that it's so interesting that we do have this repository there.
For right? sure.
Wikipedia, this repository of all of this knowledge. But at the same time, if I wanted to be popular, I should basically create a TikTok mm-hmm. account, which yeah, has cute cats
absolutely.
On it.
Absolutely. Millions of hits, man. Millions of viewers.
Like, what do you make of that? That we have all of this knowledge, but at the same time, many people, most people, myself included, I'm not sitting down reading, you know, a calculus section of Wikipedia unless I need to read it for something. So with all of this knowledge there, like, we still only care about it when it suits our purposes. And for whatever reason, our purposes tend to involve cute cats.
Yeah, I think that could be very deflating for some people who may do a video and they have their production qualities out the roof and you put that video on YouTube and it's getting destroyed by like a kid putting his finger in his brother's mouth or something like that. And it's destroying your entire existence. So I definitely get it, you know, and when, for me personally, the reason I like something like Wikipedia, it's there as kind of like a reference, you know, and references you don't necessarily have to refer to all the time. You only refer to them when you need them. And, I look at it kind of like a virtual library type situation. Now, I wasn't the kind of guy, I love reading books, but I wasn't the kind of guy that's in the library every day. It's nice to be able to have something that I can pull up at a fingertips notice when I need to reference something. Maybe it's settling an argument. Maybe it's trying to see if there's a preconceived notion I have that can be substantiated elsewhere. I like Wikipedia for that particular purpose, but it would equally shock me, Peter, if I was to look up the world website rankings, the Alexa website rankings, what they used to do. I'm not sure if it's still the same thing. But if I would be shocked if I was look on there and Wikipedia would be the number one thing on there, it'd be shocking to me at the same time.
What you said about settling arguments, the thing is one of the things I actually miss about the pre-internet world was the way in which you could have a conversation for an entire evening about who won, I don't know, the Oscar for best director in 1996 or something. And the thing is no one knew. Like, everyone would just have to rack their brain and try and come up with who scored the, I don't know, winning touchdown in the, I don't know, 2000 Super Bowl. And there was no way to actually go and independently verify that. You might call a friend who was knowledgeable, but you actually had to walk around with a set of facts in your head to be ready to deploy at any time. What do you think of the world as it is now, where in a sense you do have a repository to anything? So at the moment, I could ask you the most complicated question about astrophysics, and you could go to your phone and you could come and read me verbatim the answer about absolutely anything. And that's a good thing, but do you worry, to use that word, that it makes us feel that we're smarter than we actually are?
Not really. I'm going to use an example, a sports reference here. So there was a while before, and I'm going to use like American football as an example here, where in football games here, Peter, there was no replay. They would, maybe we thought it was a touchdown, maybe you didn't. They weren't going to the technology at all to try to look at the replay or anything like that. They're just going to make the call. And now we do have replay where we can go look at it, slow down a million times. And if it was a zero-sum situation, a zero-sum choice, I'm going to take the choice with the replay because I ultimately want the right answer, no matter how we get there. So I prefer that. Now, there are still some people who prefer the game to be the way it used to be. Oh, well, you know, the replay slows the game down. You're not exactly, you're breaking up the momentum a team may have and all the other things for all the issues with it, because things don't tend to not come with issues. There's going to be some issues. You're still getting more plays right, which I ultimately think is better for the league, is better for the game, is better for the fans. And that's how I look at kind of being able to look on your phone, your computer, stuff like that, and get the answers quickly. It may not be perfect, but I prefer these things existing so people can do that.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. One thing you said about PBS and what the equivalent might be in the UK. So in the UK, we've got the BBC, British Broadcasting Corporation.
Man, I watch that a lot. I watch that quite a bit. I have an iPlayer here and I watch them.
Yeah, yeah, okay. All right, so the way all of that is funded is we have to pay for a TV license. So if in the UK you have a device that can play live TV, you have to pay 100 and something pounds a year to pay for a TV license. And that basically gives you the right to watch live TV. And it doesn't matter how that live TV works. But basically, that license payer's fee goes to fund the BBC, which is the equivalent, I think, of PBS and like NPR, because the BBC runs TV channels, but it also runs radio stations. It's now moved into running online streaming platforms. And there's a real question in the UK as to whether we should have to be taxed to provide this public broadcasting body. But my argument with that is whenever you watch Planet Earth and you hear David Attenborough narrating
amazing,
about lions,
Sir David,
it's crazy, right?
Amazing.
Absolutely. Listen, it's to the point where there's no other natural history program about animals in the wild that is even in the ballpark of what David Attenborough does. And it's partly his voice, but it's just the quality of the production. And it's partly because the BBC can basically fund somebody to go and sit in the Arctic for 6 months waiting for one shot of a penguin falling over. And and the thing is while for a corporation, they'd be like, that's an incredible waste of money. For the BBC, their aim, like the idea, was not just to entertain, but to educate and to uplift. Doesn't always work, and like I said, lots of people have issues with the BBC, but that's our equivalent of your PBS.
I'm a fan of the BBC, and just to put it out there, there is a new PBS nature documentary called Green Planet, which David Attenborough is narrating, and he's on there. He's on there as well, so that he works just as well across the pond here, it seems.
Yeah, man, I genuinely would like to corner a market in the way that he's managed to corner his market.
Right.
It's just this, you're the guy. He's like the ready to rumble guy in boxing. There's
you're
no
right.
one quite like him.
You know, I haven't seen another one since, right?
Exactly. So on that point, at that stage, what's the second piece of advice that you'd give your younger self?
Embrace change, because it's coming. The only consistent thing in life is that things will change. And that change when I was younger, maybe there's a sense, I think as I got older, I have a sense of like, kind of like my place in the world and how insignificant things I may do can impact things overall, because the planet's just so big, the universe so big, that you feel like you can avoid change to a certain degree, or you might be even hesitant to it, because I do think that there is a certain age you can get to where you can choose not to change and you can live in a bubble all your life if you want to, but the world is going to change around you. And you know, some people chalk that up as to the world going to hell in a handbasket. You hear a lot of the older generation say that about the younger kids. These kids don't know what they're doing and all that other stuff. When it's just the world just changing. and doesn't really owe you staying the same. So that's another thing I would just tell myself, just embrace the change and just roll with the punches a bit more.
Embrace a change because it's coming.
It's coming.
It's coming. What are the changes that you see on the horizon?
It's hard to be able to tell the future exactly, but I would say that, you know, your technological advances, one of the things that we had already talked about earlier in the show, there's going to be technological advances. There's going to be certain things that, because you got to think about, and I'll give an example of something I saw. I saw an illustration from about 100 years ago about what they felt the future was going to look like. And they were just, they had these little illustrations, okay? And the illustrations that they had were all based on their current life things. So they had like horse and stables, and maybe the horse and stable was flying or something like that, but it was still a stable. It was still like a horse and carriage, you know, because that's what they were used to, you know, around this time period that these illustrations were made. So it's hard to know, Peter, without knowing what new technological advances are going to change things. Like, it's hard to know what changes were going to be made before the internet came and just changed so much about life in general. So I think that with me personally, I'm rolling with trying to stay in the present. And when changes do happen, I just tend to embrace them as far, instead of looking at them as some kind of inconvenience. And that also goes with just getting out of the comfort zone more, like, you know, just embracing different things. And that led me to being on this show with you, Peter, to be honest with you.
What was the journey to get in on this show? I'm curious.
I used to work for a radio station in Mississippi called Star 92.3. And I didn't really work for them. I had a computer store, and but I would come in. There was a guy there named Greg Slotsky, who does the DJ there. And in Mississippi, I had a tech store, and people were very hesitant to ask questions because they didn't want to come off as stupid. And I've had some of them just tell me this outright completely. Like, instead of asking a question, I'd rather come in here to say what I feel like I know, and then just hope it doesn't come off stupid, rather than ask a question and feel like that question is coming off stupid. So I approached Greg about doing a tech show where I can just give basic tech advice and stuff to kind of educate that audience a little bit. People who may listen to the show and then they come into the shop, they know a little bit more about tech. When I moved back to Atlanta, I was going to get back on the radio, and a friend of mine suggested I do a podcast instead. I'd never done a podcast. And I was like, oh, well, that seems kind of strange, but it's kind of the way we're going, kind of the theme of what we're talking about here. You know, radio wasn't growing as much as podcasts were at the time. So I decided to do the podcast, started the podcast, read a book about podcasting. Actually, I read Dummies, Podcasting for Dummies, which is a lot longer book than I anticipated it to be. but I did read it, started taking out ads, collecting all my technology and stuff like that, doing the show. Then I kind of solicit for co-hosts and everything like that through something called Craigslist here in the States. I'm not sure if you guys have Craigslist in the UK.
Yeah, we do.
Okay. So Craigslist, I went on and got a couple of few co-hosts, and fast forward 3 or 4 years, and here we are, Peter.
Okay. Well, it's, you embrace a change. The change is coming, but what do you make of a change, for example, like the reduction in privacy that we have nowadays?
Mm-hmm. I feel like changes don't really owe, and this is kind of like the embrace part, because they're not always comfortable changes, but they don't owe, like, changes aren't going to run, like COVID didn't run itself past somebody as an idea before it became COVID. You know what I mean? Change doesn't really owe you explaining to you and making sure it's moving at your pace type situation. So there's going to be comfortable changes and there's going to be uncomfortable changes. But I feel like you only worry about what you can control, which is your reaction to said changes. And that's kind of what I do. I just worry about, okay, well, now this seems to be what's going on. How do I react to it? How do I set myself up for success in the future dealing with this change? And just kind of move on from there. You know, you worry about the things you can control.
When you said that about COVID sort of not passing it by anyone, I just imagine a Dave Chappelle sketch with, you know, COVID pitching its ideas.
Right. Like,
no, you know? Dude.
No, dude, PowerPoints or anything, not here, man. It just hit us here.
Just enthusiastically saying, yeah. So I'm going to shut down the entire world, you know?
Right.
So one of the things as I get older is, like, I've always been a techie. So I love technology. As I said, it's one of the things that makes me feel like a kid, to be quite frank. The first time I put on an Oculus, it's ages before I got an Oculus, partly because it's owned by Facebook and various other things I might say about Facebook, but I use the Oculus, and the first time I used it, it was just, I felt like I was about six. It was just so intuitive and cool. But as I've got older, there are, it's not worrying about change, and it's not being unwilling to embrace it. But there's a difference between change and progress.
For sure.
Like, progress has a direction to it, and change, you can essentially, you know, just run in circles.
Mm-hmm.
And at the moment, one thing I would say about embracing change is that in certain ways, the world to me doesn't feel like it's changed much, or it's changed enough.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say in respect to that? Is it something that I'm getting wrong? Is it me in my old age, or am I onto something?
I feel like it's changed. It happens. It's kind of like you look up. Like, I would say, for people who might know what a lily pad is, and you let's say you have like a lily pad, and there's a massive lake. You can only step on one lily pad before the other lily pad appears. Okay. So mm-hmm. you're on a massive lake. You have one lily pad, you step on another other lily pad appears, you step on it. Now let's say that other lily pad that appeared is kind of like right in front of the one you're on. So you don't feel like you've gone that far. So then you step on another one, you step on another one, you step on another one. And each time that you're stepping on a new lily pad, it's right in front of you, Peter. So you don't feel like you're going very far because it's right in front of you. Mm. You're just making one step. You turn around and you look back at how far you are into that lake, it's been a significant amount of change. And sometimes you just don't realize it, you know?
Yeah. I like that.
That's how it is, tends to be for me. And I think that's just because things don't change massively overnight, that you have to look back 5 years. If you were to look back five, at least for me, 5 years ago, it looks very different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I hear that. And I guess this is why it's twinned with the lack of worry, because you're moving forward, and it's essentially just putting your foot out and stepping on that
next
foot
right in front of the other, right?
You're not concerned too much in terms of the direction. Like, the direction will be what the direction is.
Correct.
But in a sense, where you end up is where you're meant to be.
Exactly.
Because otherwise, every time you go to step on a lily pad, the question is this the right lily pad?
Right.
Am I going in the right direction? And these are I'm presuming the type of worries that you were talking about at first, that you could just occupy your mind with all the what ifs rather than the, okay, what do I have to do? Okay, let me do that and I'll deal with all the other lily pads when I get to them.
Exactly. Advice I give people, younger people, when I hear them worrying about moving out their house, having kids, buying another house, getting a car, having a career, retiring. And I tell them that the problem is you're worrying about all of it now. Worry about just getting a job, moving out the house. Keep that focus on the one thing that you keep your brain, because we only have so much brain power to use. You know, we only have 100%, right? So you can't worry about all these. You can't give everything 5% and worry about 20 different things at the same time. If you worry about the one thing, and then you're just kind of setting a trajectory, Peter, right? Like, so we all kind of set trajectories where we feel like we want our lives to go. If you want to become a doctor, maybe you go to school more than somebody who doesn't. Once you set that trajectory, once you set that path and you start stepping on those lily pads, there will be room for divergence. Like, you're not necessarily married. Like, if you decide you want to step on a lily pad and step to the left after you've gone about halfway and you've got more education about things, because a lot of things you don't get an education about until you're in them. And then you might feel like, well, this isn't what I thought, or this is exactly what I thought. Then you move in a different direction. But you are still kind of setting that trajectory for where you want to go, you know? So there's no use in worrying about the entirety of your life today.
Okay. And on that note, what's the third piece of advice you'd give your younger self?
All right. So the third piece of advice is money isn't everything. Now, this is going to be hard in a capitalist society. And I'm going to tell you, this is much easier for me to say now than it was for me to say maybe 7-8 years ago.
Because you got money now.
Yeah, because you're in a better financial situation. And like, you know, where you don't necessarily worry about everything every day. Because the example I was giving you before is a very real example. Like, there's been times in my life, Peter, where I get to a stoplight and if my car starts making a certain noise, instantaneous panic, Peter. Instantaneous.
Yeah, because
I can't afford this, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
It don't matter what the noise is. I can't afford the noise.
What's the most embarrassing situation you've gotten into with a car, with a dodgy car?
Man, so I had a car where the driver's side window would not roll up all the way. It would roll up like halfway. Okay. Now, when it would rain, Peter, like, and this actually, I'm gonna tell you the actual story that actually happened to me. So I had a friend, she's from Ethiopia. She had a friend coming over from Ethiopia to visit. Okay. Her friend comes over to visit her and she was like, "Hey, I want you to come over and meet my friend." I'm like, "Okay, yeah, fine." And I had my little Buick Century at the time and it wouldn't roll up. The driver's side window wouldn't roll up. And just to tell you what my economic situation was at the time, Peter, this is a problem that could have been fixed for like $100 at the time. I didn't have it. So I rode with that thing like that for about six, seven months. So I go to meet her. It was raining on the way. I go to meet her friend. The right half of my body would be dry, but the left half of my body would be wet. You know, so my clothes and all that stuff. So when I pulled up and I met her friend and got out the car like that, she just had like a little laugh. Like, I don't think she meant to hurt my feelings or anything like that. Natural, like, wow, type thing. You know what I mean? This guy showing up here, he's like half wet and, you know, the other half of him is dry. And asking why, and how to explain my car window didn't really roll up and all that stuff. So that was one of my more embarrassing car just not working the way it should be type of story.
Car troubles. It used to get me down, you know. Like if I got low on funds, so if I didn't have much money, the thing that would irk me the most would be that wouldn't be able to freely fill up my car with petrol or drive. And bear in mind, when I say freely fill up my car with petrol, I mean put £10 in my car, right? So
now obviously,
so now this is the thing. So in the States here, you talk about gallons and you pay what's $4. If it goes over $4 a gallon, it's like you want to get a new president.
Yeah? Stressful. They want to kick the guy out of here. Absolutely.
Listen, I'm just about to calculate this because I don't know how much it would be. So $4 a US gallon, and I want to know what it is in pounds. Because you generally don't know how much we pay for petrol, I don't think, right?
I got surprised by that when I went to Canada and saw their prices and how they were calculated. I saw the prices and I thought they were better at first, but then they weren't doing it in gallons. And I calculated what the real price was and was instantaneously.
All right. So US dollars. All right. Okay. So this is about right. So basically we probably pay about double, maybe a bit more than double what you pay for petrol.
So you're paying like $8 a gallon.
It must be something like $8. Let me look now. $8 a gallon. We're paying more than that now. So at the moment, we're probably paying about $8.65. Yeah, probably about $8.65 a gallon.
No, sir. The guy would be impeached, man. They'd have him out of here, Peter. He'd be out of here instantly. Pitchforks and everything, man.
This is, so anyway, so back to the, when I get to a point where, okay, I've got £10 that I can put in my car, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're running low on funds, it just means that it limits your freedom, right?
But absolutely. But
the thing about the car and mobility is the clearest indicator because literally you can't move. And not only you have issues moving, but like you said, you get to the stoplight and I've been in the situation many a time where all of a sudden the car runs out of petrol. And, you know, like you're just on your, yeah, you're on your own. You've got to
figure it out,
you know,
man.
You got to figure it out. And it's cars and being young, particularly with cars. Some of the crazy situations I found myself in, there were times where you drive in a car which has a bad battery. So literally, at least 50% of the time when you're starting this car, you have to jump start it from someone else.
Been there before.
Yeah. To the point where there's times where, and I don't even know why or how a person would decide to do this, that I'd have a battery in the boot that I could jumpstart my main battery from if there was a problem. And I thought that was a sensible solution. Man.
Instead of just replacing the battery altogether.
Instead of just replacing the battery altogether, which is comes back to the point about money, which is when you have it, it's like, yeah, you don't need it. But when you don't need it, it's kind of like air. You recognize very quickly that you need to take a big gulp of, So how did you sort out your finances? Was it that you earned more or you spent less or a bit of both?
It was a little bit of both. And since that, for one, when you're really poor, you get used to learning how to live really poor. Like, yeah, my expenses were pretty manageable because I was just so used to living like paycheck to paycheck type situation. What started to change was, for one, when I got the computer store, that didn't really change things because that's just more money going out. For anybody who's ever opened a retail store knows that in the beginning, in those first few years, you own a job. You don't own a store. Like you own a job for the most part. And the job wasn't paying nearly as good as any other job would pay. You're underpaid and you're just kind of trying to keep the lights on type of situation. But I still started to see my trajectory change slightly then. And what really changed it was about 2 years ago, Peter, things changed kind of significantly. So my job was better paying around 2016, 17 or so after I got my car fixed and everything like that. Things started to get slightly better. So I noticed there's like levels to it. So things got slightly better then. Fast forward to 2018, get towards the end of 2018, things get a little bit better in the sense of now I'm getting my credit together and stuff like that. Okay. So everything for me happened in stages, Peter. It wasn't like overnight. Then you get from 2018 to 2020, and it was a situation where now I noticed, I started investing. I didn't notice anything. I just started investing. And that would be another thing I would say. I really wish I had invested more when I was younger. It's something that people tell you and you hear them say, hey, if you guys start putting away $20 now and you do it for 30, 40 years, you're going to be, you'll be rich one day. You think like, well, I'm not want to wait that long. And I want to get whatever I want to get my $20 now type situation. So that's how I was when I was younger. If I started investing when I was younger, I'd be so much better off now. But I have had a short investment life, which has been about 2 years now at this point. And that has completely just changed life in general. That changed almost everything with just that one thing right there.
So again, so you say money isn't everything, but you'd still advise your younger self to pursue it.
I would advise my younger self to start investing. The difference with the reason why I say the money isn't everything is I've had the benefit of having a job that maybe I paid better than other jobs, but I hated the job, which in turn made me hate life. And one of the things that made me realize is like, you could always get another job, but you have one life. And this is so much easier advice, Peter, to give to somebody who's not necessarily living like hand to mouth, like, not necessarily paycheck to paycheck, because you can still kind of realize that living paycheck to paycheck. But if you're really, really, really poor, then you probably feel like money will solve all your problems that you got. You know what I mean? So I get that perspective because that's probably how I would have felt if you had told me that 6 to 8 years ago versus kind of how I feel now. And you've had the benefit of doing certain things for better money and having that actually illustrated to you that it didn't lead to a better existence of life in general for you.
Right. So I asked you before, if you had all the money in the world, what would you build? Mm-hmm. If you had all the money in the world, no, money isn't everything, but everyone has desires. If you had all the money in the world, what would you buy?
If I had all the money in the world.
Just as a gift to yourself.
It's a gift to myself.
Could be big or small.
I don't know if there's anything that I could say, hey, I'm going to go out and buy this. I really believe in just giving back, man. Like, I don't really know of anything that I would just randomly just go purchase. I don't really, I have a home. I don't really just need another home. Maybe I buy another home on another coast because I live on the East Coast now. I live in Atlanta. Maybe I'd buy one in Cali just so I can travel, or maybe I buy one in the UK just so I can kind of just travel and have a place to go to that's not a hotel. Because I do like the traveling. So maybe I would do something like that, but there's no like grand plan where I'm like, well, that there's this 300-foot yacht I've been looking at. Like, would love to go out and get that. Like, there's nothing like that I feel like I want. And I'm a tech guy, Peter. So I'm like tech guy. I'm a nerd. I got my PS5. I got my Xbox Series X. I mean, that's like gaming heaven for me. Like, I don't really know.
All right. So check this. So would you, if you had all the money in the world, mm-hmm. pay to go up into space?
Probably not.
Wow.
But you're talking to a guy who's very interested in space. I'm very interested in the James Webb Telescope. I nerd out on all those pictures. Watching all the space documentaries and stuff like that. But at the same time, I'm not a guy who likes the uncertainty of things. Like I need that those tires to be kicked a little bit more before I get up there. Like I'm not, yeah. It's like going into deeply into the ocean, Peter. Like there's a lot of similarities between these two things, both of them vastly unexplored. Right. But there's no 911 down there. They're not coming for you. You know what I mean? So that part I need to be worked out. And then maybe, yeah, I'll take a space flight, something like that. But it would have to be so worked out, Peter. Like, I'm not sure how many people have to go before me.
No, I get that. The thing is that it's weird. There's a little bit of, I wouldn't say the daredevil about me, but there is sort of the getting the exhilaration from certain things. And, oh, yeah, going up into space, zero gravity. Even if it was a one-way trip, I'd probably think about it for a long time. But the other day, I learned to scuba dive, actually because of a previous guest who
suggested, nice, man.
Like, we were talking about it. And I learned, yeah, so I went and so I'm a trained paddy open water scuba diver or whatever now. And it is otherworldly. It really is. It really is like, because the thing is, I'm not a great swimmer. So the best moment was the point at which you put the breathing apparatus into your mouth and you can just breathe underwater. And it's just so... Yeah, it was a game changer. It was like it removed that anxiety that I generally have when I'm swimming, which is I just sort of swallow and breathe in water. But anyway, you go and you swim and you go out, you go underwater and you're ridiculous. It's you're close to the shore, but it's like you could be sort of 20 meters deep, which in the big scheme of things isn't huge for the ocean, but obviously as a human being your ears pop and it's just weird. Anyway, when you come back out onto shore, and this is the best thing sometimes about doing things like this, is that it just changes your perspective, because you come back onto the shore and you look out at the ocean, and at that point it was, I like standing at the beach, I like going to the beach, I like looking out at the ocean, but that was the first moment where I properly had the awe. Because I'd seen a little portion of life in a tiny little bit of it. And then when you look out at the ocean and you realize, like, okay, that's how big it is. And that's what it must look like if you were to swim around it. You realize that, yeah, we're tiny specks. We're tiny specks. And life-wise, I think one of the reasons I'd like to go into space is when you hear of astronauts who've returned, one of the things that they say is they have a closer affinity to the planet. Like, it feels like home. It feels like a mother in a sense.
Interesting.
Because when they go and they look back at it, they have just a different appreciation for where they came from.
That's very interesting, man. And I can, and not really surprising, man. I get that. That sounds pretty, like, I can see you having an experience like that and just having a complete new appreciation for things at that point, you know?
Yeah, but it's similar to what you were saying about, you know, things. And this is the other thing, though, is as humans experience, we just get so used to things. Like you said about the lily pads. And if you did get the $300 million yacht, at some point, it would just be your yacht. And people would come onto your yacht and be like, oh, my God, this is the most amazing place. And at that point, you'd look around and go, oh, yeah, it is actually pretty cool. But until that moment, you'd have just got used to it, because
exactly.
It would just be your new normal, which is one of the things I think that's useful about your advice. Money isn't everything. The problem is I guess if you try and pursue something that you're never going to actually catch, you're never going to catch all of the money in the world, you know? And if you're to try and pursue that can warp things slightly. But of course, it's easy to say this in the first world with, you know, working lights and
exactly air conditioning and other things like that. That's you come so.
Oh, see, we don't have AC in the UK.
Like, oh, wow. Listen, what are you guys doing there?
We're first world. We're not like the States. No. We just live in our houses, and if it gets warm, we open the window.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, you just blown my mind just now. I scratched my third piece of advice. Let's get that out of here.
Yeah, listen, this is why you all got independence from us, you know? We live hard life over here. The UK's nice in its own way. But yeah, you're all in the States. Some of your creature comforts are just standard. Whenever yes. I go to the States.
You get used to them.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that's really cool about the States, I must say, is that you have different climates and terrain in one
yes,
country.
Yes, for sure.
So if you want snow, you can have that. If you want desert, you can have that. You want the tropics, you know, you can have that. That's cool. Have you ever been to the UK?
I have not. I definitely want to go. It's on my bucket list. I literally just got my passport today, though. So in the way that goes for the United States, that means I won't actually see that thing for like 3 months.
So did you say you live in Atlanta?
I live in Atlanta, Georgia. Yes, sir.
Okay. Atlanta, Georgia. I hear that there's a very successful, tight, and quite large sort of middle-class black community in Atlanta.
I would say that's probably one of the reasons. I grew up jaded in that sense. And I noticed that traveling to other places, because if you were to come to Atlanta, it's not strange to see black people in positions of power in Atlanta. Whereas what other places you go, that might be in the single digit percentages at other places or non-existent. So at all, whereas me, I've gotten just so used to it. You know, it's so seeing black people of all different types, because it's not in such a sense where every black person is successful, but you just see so many of them that it's not strange to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like it's not intriguing that you could see black middle, upper middle class or rich black people. You know, we have a lot of rich black people here. So it's not strange to see it. And I'm glad I kind of grew up in an area where that's not so, because who knows how I would have grown up, Peter, otherwise. If I was in an area where that didn't seem like that was something that you could aspire to, maybe I grow up a different person, you know?
Yeah. It's, listen, these realities of life, the fact that so much of who you are is circumstance, you know, the luck and where you were born, the time you were born in.
Exactly.
I've worked abroad once first time I properly lived abroad, and it was in sort of majority black country, and it was just so different being a person who would be considered part of the majority rather than the minority, because it just meant there were certain things that would rattle around my brain that just didn't, because I was just in a place in which, yeah, being a minority wasn't really an issue.
No.
And until I did it and experienced it, I wouldn't have been able to appreciate precisely how impactful it was. It was very impactful on my worldview, just because it made me realize that a lot of the concerns or feelings or some of the things that people would describe, you know, in the UK were partly a consequence of being a minority in a majority country.
For sure.
Rather than anything else. It was interesting being in a place where, like you said, you see middle class, upper class, you see all sorts of different people, and there's no real way to demarcate them based on identity characteristics.
For sure. And I see a lot of people do that, I think, based on the areas they grow up in. And I will tell you one thing, Peter, that's paid massive dividends for me in my life that I don't think my mom. So when I was younger, I used to hate it, but I thank my mom for it later. I'm not sure if she's doing it on purpose or not, but we moved a lot when I was younger. Okay. Moved around a ton. Every year I'm having to make new friends, and the areas we moved to could be all black areas, then areas where I'm the only black kid there, all white areas, then an area that might be a mixture, but you have a mixture. You might have Asian, Hispanic, white, black, you know, so all these different areas I moved to growing up. Okay. And I hated it when I was growing up because I had to make new friends all the time. But one of the things I realized that paid massive dividends for me as being an adult now is, for one, being able to easily communicate with people because I had to make new friends all the time. So I got that skill out of necessity, just having to talk to different new people all the time because I moved every single year. But another thing that did for me majorly is it never gave me a local mindset. So I didn't grow up in an all-Black area. I didn't grow up in an all-white area. I grew up in these different areas. I was able to see different existences, even though they were very different. We're all still in the same state, but they were 30, 40, 50, 60, 100 miles from each other. You know what I mean? So they were still very far from each other. Okay. So learning, what I've noticed is now when I will go to areas that are predominantly one or the other, some of the people in these areas are handcuffed by those perspectives, and it's holding them back because they're only living life as they've seen it. So you can't really fault them all the way. You know, they're only living life. If you've never seen a successful Black person, and all Black people in your areas are criminals, and probably think they're criminals. If you think all white people are rich, because every white person you know is rich, you probably think all white people are rich. And these are things that I've talked to and seen from different people who grew up in areas that are more homogeneous. I don't know if homogeneous is the word I'm looking for, but just maybe one culture there for the most part, and doesn't have a lot of cultural diversity. So that has helped me tremendously. I cannot understate how much that has helped me in life in general. I'm dealing just with different people.
Yeah, I'd say there's a help, there's a hindrance. I had a similar type of upbringing in the sense that I moved around and constantly was in a situation where I'm trying to join other people's tribes.
Right.
I'm tribeless, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But what that meant is I've grown up kind of with a tribeless type of mentality. And more to the point is that if you visit enough tribes, you recognize that the pride that each of the tribes has is kind of self-serving. It's like they're proud because that's what you've got to be. You're part of that tribe. But strictly speaking, all of the tribes feel like this. All of them feel, oh yeah, we're awesome, we're special.
Exactly, they all think
whatever
that
the
way,
case
right?
may be. And everyone else does this funny, you know? Oh, what, you shower at night? Oh my God, you're a weirdo. What, you shower in the morning? Oh, that's so strange. You know, like, it's just, human beings can split. We can be divided up in so many different ways. But one of the other things about going and sort of seeing sort of different tribes, trying to integrate into different groups of people, is you also see the shared aspects. And the shared aspects is that ultimately, the one thing I know in all of the different areas that you went, you had most people who were relatively nice and pleasant. And you had a few people who were just dicks. Like some of them, they just can't help themselves. They're just nasty people.
It's just
and
the way it is,
right? It doesn't matter where you go. That's just humans, you know?
Yes.
We're the human species. So one of the things that I feel I'm quite comfortable in doing this is I'll travel to places and I'll go to place by myself. And most of the time, I might not speak the language and, you know, I might not dress in the local style, but if you can connect with the sort of the standard human operating system, wherever you go, you realize everything else is just, to use a computer techie term, just skins. It's just skins.
It is.
People have just skinned the same OS and they're just trying to convince you that, oh, this one's the best one. And it's like, come on, man. Like, that's just not the way it works. Like, we've got the same operating system. It's just what we do. Now, obviously, there's cultural differences, and cultural differences can mean the difference between success and failure, quite frankly. But even then, the focus on differences sometimes obscures the similarities. But like I said, there's two sides to it. And the other side is, do you have a tribe, right? So you've moved and you can meet different people and you can insert yourself into tribes, but do you feel as a person, as Reggie Johnson, that it's like, yeah, I've got a tribe with me? Not counting your family, because for most people, it's their family that they'd say would be their tribe.
I feel, and I'm going to use the same example that you just gave. So if you are, and let's just say 10, let's just throw 10 tribes in there. And let's say that you move from tribe to tribe because you have to move around a lot. I've taken a few people from each tribe to somehow now have my own tribe, but it was not thought out to create my own tribe. But because a couple people, to a couple people from this tribe, a couple people from this tribe, a couple people from this tribe, now you look around and you have your own tribe. And that's kind of where it comes from. Just taking people from the other tribes. And I'm not sure if any of these people would get along with each other, but I'm the common denominator in a lot of their lives. You know what I mean? Just because of, for one, what I learned is just you can't be judgmental about how people live their life. Like, that's just one thing. You can't, because people are different. If people are, I judge people a lot of times, and I wouldn't say judge them in a sense that I just think they're a complete idiot, but I'm going to think about how much advice, conversation I would have for a person, depending on their opinions about things, Peter. So I find that people that are less traveled are married to their opinions, where I want to be friends with people who are dating their opinions. If you're dating your opinions, it's different than being married to them, because then things can change, you know, because some people, this is the way it is. They see life this way, and anything outside of that perspective is considered strange to them. And even worse, can be considered wrong to them. But there's no right or wrong, Peter. This is gray. Like, humans have so much gray area, it's ridiculous. It's not black and white.
Do you know what? What I love here is about the analogy. Like, I'm a big analogy fan. The analogy you just gave, I really like, because the difference between being married to an opinion and dating an opinion, but then also the other thing is, there's some people are just very easy, you know? So what do you think about that? Like, you can date, but you can date and you can kind of go over the board. You could be like a man whore.
Right, for sure.
You know? Yeah. And the thing is like, in terms of opinions as well, like, you can kind of do that. Hop on the next idea that looks in your direction.
Right. And then change that a week later.
Yeah, and you know, exactly. And then that's just like, yeah, I like that analogy. I'm going to use that. I'm going to.
Yeah, man. Go ahead. I, you know, what's funny is I just started using that this year, but I've just really liked it. So I've used it a lot to kind of illustrate that point of kind of people I tend to want to be around, people who are like dating their opinions. We all have them, but how concrete are you running with that perspective? And are you running outside of what your little bubble is and expressing that? That's how you see a lot of people get into trouble, whether they have bigoted opinions, whether they have opinions about other cultures that they don't really understand. And then they run with these opinions that they have. And once they come outside of their bubble, and let's say this is social media, and they're expressing that to millions of people, they get into trouble, because you express this backward idea to millions of people. Well, you and your friends, maybe your family, your close circle of friends, all think the same thing. So y'all all thought this idea was a great one. You take that public with millions of people now, and they're all calling you an idiot. You don't know what's happening.
All right. So continuing the analogy, and this is, yeah.
I feel like.
So.
Go ahead.
No, go on.
So you were saying continuing the analogy. I don't know if you wanted me to continue it, because I don't know if I really.
I was gonna say continuing your analogy.
Okay, go for it.
I was gonna ask you, is right, you're dating, right? You're dating. It's different ideas out there, you know. Some of them, you know, is there an idea that you bumped into and you thought to yourself, do you know what? I got to wife that. That's the idea for me. I can stick with that one forever. Are you gonna be a persistent bachelor?
I would say
you're always going to be on the market. I'm always on the market for a new girlfriend.
You know, I wouldn't say that there. Well, I would say there is one, but it leads to more. So it's kind of like an answer, but not an answer. And that's just being open minded. I am very married to that. Married to have an open perspective. I am. I approach every situation, every person, no matter their economic situation, no matter how much power they have or not or don't have. They all have a clean slate with our initial correspondence. You know what I mean? I will treat things with an open mind. And I find that just comes from moving around and seeing so many things that people might have strong opinions about and be completely wrong and not wanting to be those people. But that, I think that would be the one right there. Just keeping an open mind. And I think that I will always be like that. Have an open perspective about other people's ideas and perspectives and stuff.
That's very cool. I've learned a lot. I like the perspective of embracing change because it's coming. I like just the inevitability, yes, the starkness of it,
right,
and the factual nature of it. You know, it's the future will be like today in some ways and won't be like today in others. And if you can figure out the ways in which it won't be like today, I guess you'll make a lot of money, right?
Very rich man, right? Very successful.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. So yeah, embrace change because it's coming. Now, gonna end the show, and I'm gonna end it by asking you one final question. We've talked about three pieces of advice that you'd give your younger self, but today, what piece of advice does Reggie Johnson need right now?
What piece of advice would I give myself right now is roll with the punches, man. The same thing kind of like embracing change. I feel like the embracing change doesn't necessarily stay in the past. That's a piece of advice that kind of like you could live by that advice. You know what I mean? Because of change always being constant. Like, just roll with the punches, man. Just don't get too far up. Don't get too far down. And people say that a lot. And that's something I used to hear people say a lot of times. And when I would have my real down moments, I don't know what they're thinking. Like, how are you guys so level-headed about these things? But then life shows you how you can be so level-headed about these things. As life goes on, you're going to have great things happen. You're going to have bad things happen. But there should be both should be happening. And how much attention you choose to pay one over the other. Because a lot of times, Peter, they're both happening. But people pay more attention to one or the other. They might pay more attention to the good stuff than they do the bad stuff, Just understand both are happening. Don't get too far up and down. And that's kind of still advice I live by, like on a daily, to be honest with you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dear Younger Me podcast. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed recording it. If you want to be on the show, send an email to hello@dearyounger.me.